All rise. The United States Court of Appeals for the Federal Circuit is now open and in session. God save the United States and this honorable court.
Good morning, everyone. Before today, a total of six cases. Three of them will be submitted today on the briefs without oral arguments. They are namely Appeal Number 06-3046, Levinsky v. Department of Justice, Appeal Number 06-3241, Roach v. Department of Defense, and Appeal Number 06-3326, Warm v. Department of Army. On the three-case argument list this morning, we'll hear first Appeal Number 06-1137, New Generation v. Slocum. Mr. Fisher, good morning.
Good morning.
Please proceed.
May it please the Court, my name is Michael Frischer. I'm the law firm McGuire & English, and I represent the appellant New Generation Devices. This is an appeal from the dismissal of the New Jersey District Court for lack of personal jurisdiction.
It will help us if you keep your voice up a little more.
Certainly. This case is just like the Acro case. In the Acro case,
In the Acro case, there was an obligation on the part of the licensee to defend and enforce the patent. Here, the licensees have no such obligation. So how is it just like Acro?
Because there are agreements between the patent holder and residents in the state of New Jersey, and there are continuing obligations between those parties because of those license agreements.
But they don't involve enforcing or defending the patent.
Well, they do to one extent in that the...
But in Acro, there were enforcement and defense obligations by contract. Here, there is nothing of the sort.
Yes, the obligations here comprise the requirement of any of the licensees to report any infringing activities to the licensor. The licensees are charged with monitoring it, with monitoring potential infringement, and they have other obligations as well.
All right, well, if that's analogous to Acro, then you win. If it's not analogous to Acro, then presumably you don't. But what about the requirement that the intrusions, I'll say, into the state of New Jersey by the two Slocum entities have to be related to the present lawsuit, an attack on patent validity and a request for a declaration of non-infringement?
Yes, I think that the intrusions comprise a threat of patent infringement against the plaintiff, and that threat took the form of a patent infringement case.
I'm not following you. Your lawsuit says this patent is invalid.
Right.
What Slocum has done in New Jersey is license its method and sell a product. How does the licensing or sale of the Slocum product have anything to do with the validity of the patent or whether your client's product or method infringes?
Well, in the first instance, I think that there is a threat of infringement leveled at the plaintiff, and that threat took the form of a lawsuit.
But the court below didn't rule on lack of reasonable apprehension. The court below ruled that there was no personal jurisdiction because there was no relatedness between the subject matter of your lawsuit and the New Jersey-based activities of either Slocum entity. So it seems to me that to win, you have to prove that that's wrong, that they actually are related within the meaning of the case law.
Well, I think, Your Honor, that they are related to the extent that they stem, that they relate to the same patents in suit. So the license agreements relate to the patents in suit, the products that were sold into the jurisdiction are covered by the patents in suit, the obligations relating to what the licensee has to do in New Jersey relate to the patents in suit.
And even so, the activities in New Jersey are so minor with respect to Slocum.
Well, I'm not sure they are minor, and I don't think they are minor. I think they're continuous.
They had no office there. Their sales were a minuscule percentage of their total sales.
but I think they were continuous, systematic, and purposefully directed to New Jersey. They have license agreements.
Purposefully directed to New Jersey or purposefully directed to any state?
Well, New Jersey and other states, certainly, but New Jersey as much as any other state in that they have licensees.
As little as any other state.
Okay.
There's an abuse of discretion standard, too, isn't there? Whether you grant the offer of judgment? I'm sort of switching a little bit.
Yeah.
In other words, even if there is jurisdiction, there's some discretion on the part of, even if there's jurisdiction in terms of the constitutional limits, the district judge has discretion to reject the DJ action.
Okay, but with respect to the idea of specific jurisdiction, I believe the judge erred.
No, but I think what Judge Lurie is getting you past jurisdiction, saying even if there was jurisdiction in a constitutional sense, the district judge doesn't have to exercise it. The district judge has the right to decline to exercise it. And since that's so, and our review would be for an abuse of discretion, how could you meet that very deferential review standard on the discretionary side?
I'm not sure that the New Jersey judge articulated that sort of finding. Rather, the district judge said that there is no jurisdiction, not that there was a declination to exercise it.
You seem to be saying that if a patent owner does anything with respect to the forum state, that there's automatically jurisdiction for a declaratory judgment action attacking the validity of that patent, because it's the same patent. And if that's true, then there would always be jurisdiction. It's always going to be the same patent. So the limits then become meaningless. Well, and then the lack of connectedness or the lack of real presence in the forum by a particular DJ defendant would never be remedial, because the DJ defendant would always have to litigate in the state where he doesn't want to be, because it's always the same patent. So your view of the law makes it meaningless. It means there's no limit on what state any patent owner would be called into. That's totally against the whole thrust of the case law.
I'm not proposing that at all. I'm proposing, rather, that that Slocum has exercised a significant amount of, directed a significant amount of business activity at New Jersey concerning these patents, such that jurisdiction over Slocum in New Jersey is proper.
As a matter of general jurisdiction?
As a matter of both. As a matter of general jurisdiction, because...
Well, how do you defend as to general jurisdiction when their physical presence in the state is zero? No offices, no employees, no agents, no registered place of business, no license to do business, etc., etc. Absolute zero presence in the state of New Jersey. How can you say there's general jurisdiction when there's zero presence?
Because their sales into New Jersey are not merely happenstance. They are purposeful. They have licenses with New Jersey entities. They direct advertisements to these New Jersey entities. They sell product directly to these New Jersey entities. They ship to New Jersey.
What case is factually analogous to your case, where the physical presence is zero, but there's some sales-related transaction? What's your best case? What's the closest factual analog where we've ever upheld a jurisdiction?
Can I say that for the
Well, let me ask you another question, which is the email and the website. Which of the Slocum entities was involved in the website? Was it Enterprise?
It has the website. Enterprise sells the products. Enterprise advertises the
So they send the website, but can you... I was a little confused by what I saw on the record in terms of this reply email. There's a website. The website doesn't sell the products, right? It's information, correct?
The website provides information, by the way, on vets that have been certified and trained by the trust, even though the website is by the enterprises. Orders can be made by clicking links, email links. You can click on an email link and send an email to order a product.
So you click on a link and you send an email, and that do you consummate a sale, or do you just, what is the response on the email? What do you email for? You say, I want to buy such and such, or I want to do such and such, and it's done?
Well, it's available. I think the link is orders@slocumenterprises.com, something along those lines. So it's set up to achieve that functionality.
And what's the status of the other two actions that were cited in the briefs on the related cases? There's a reference to, I think, a DJ in Southern District of New York and another case in Northern District of California. Anything happened with those cases since the briefs were filed?
The New York case is pending. The California case stands dismissed currently.
The California case was an infringement case brought by, and that was dismissed lack of jurisdiction?
No, that was dismissed based on the fact that there was a conditional dismissal order. And so it stands dismissed without prejudice currently.
And the Southern District of New York was another DJ action, right? Well,
that is correct.
Your people can't seem to get this case tried. They sued you in Oregon, correct that? And now you've gone after them in your home state, but they're not there. I don't disagree. And it seems to me the real answer is, if they've got a real claim against you, they ought to go after you in your home state. The reverse of this case, which somehow I gather hasn't happened yet.
No, that has not happened.
Maybe it'll never happen.
Can't disagree with you.
Do you sell in every state?
We sell in a lot of states. I don't think we sell in every state.
Why don't you just lay back and wait?
Because, for example, the second choice of the patent owner is the Northern District of California. That's not a very convenient jurisdiction for a small entity from New Jersey.
All right, do you want to save the rest of your time for rebuttal?
Yes, please.
Thank you, sir. Ms. Pickford?
Thank you.
Now, you're proceeding on the basis of the brief of the Kolish Hartwell firm?
That is correct, Your Honor. Our firm substituted in for Kolish in all of the various actions in approximately September.
So, of course, you're limited to the arguments raised in that brief. You can't bring in something at this point that's not within the scope of the red brief.
Correct, Your Honor.
Very well. Please proceed.
What's your firm?
My firm is Chernoff, Dillhauer, McClung, and Stencil. We're a 15-lawyer firm in Portland, Oregon. All members of the patent bar are patent, trademarks, and copyrights is all we do. To quickly touch on Judge Prost's question about the status of the other litigations, just to provide a little more information, the New York case, which is the DJ action filed by New Generation Devices, is still pending. The parties have submitted a joint scheduling order indicating that we jointly request that jurisdictional discovery be cut off by the end of the year, and that the judge in that case hear Slocum's motion to dismiss for lack of personal jurisdiction in January or as soon as the court's schedule allows. We have not heard back from the judge in that case about whether he's adopting our schedule or not. On the California case, prior counsel had, with the consent of New Generation Devices, contacted the court indicating that they were jointly requesting a conditional dismissal to give parties time to wrap up settlement negotiations, which I will not get into here. Obviously, settlement has not been consummated, but that case was dismissed without prejudice. At this time, there are no patent infringement claims asserted by Slocum Enterprises or Slocum Trust against New Generation Devices, period.
What are the major differences between the declaratory judgment action now before our panel and the one pending in the Southern District of New York in front of the trial?
I believe they're identically wrong.
What about the website? If you can click on the website, it's arguably informational when you click it on, but there's a link and you press it and submit a purchase order. Why isn't that sufficient under the case law?
If you look at the spectrum of interactivity that was outlined in the Zippo case, between a highly interactive website, something of an Amazon.com basis, versus a billboard type of website, which is purely informational. Ours does have a modicum of more interactivity than that. The enterprise's website does allow people to send emails or to click if they'd like to be contacted about new products, things of that nature.
But also, does it allow them to purchase it? I mean, how is it different than Amazon if you all you have to do is press one button and there you are submitting a purchase order?
It does not allow purchasing. It has no place to enter credit card information or billing information or things of that nature. You need something more, a contact back from Slocum Enterprises in order for a sale to go forward. And the
what does the email accomplish?
The email,
if I click on the email link and then I send an email saying I want to buy one of these things, is that a sale or what more has to happen?
That is not a sale. That is an indication from a hypothetically New Jersey resident indicating that they would like to contact an Oregon corporation to purchase a product. So this
what happens next?
Then the Oregon corporation would contact them back and indicate we've got products available and ship pursuant to their request. And my understanding is that's what happened here. It was not a mass mailing or national advertising.
Yeah, but I click on and I say, I like your product, I want to purchase five whatever. Please tell me where to send the check and confirm the sale. Isn't that it? I mean, what more is done at the other end other than sending the products and the bill?
That is largely all that happens, except that the Slocum Enterprises outfit in Eugene, Oregon has to contact them back to consummate that sale. In other words, is that a binding contract at the time they click and say, I'm interested in purchasing? I would submit that was not addressed in the record below, but given the small size of the operation with three permanent employees, I would say if you changed your mind and decided you were no longer interested, they would say okay and walk away.
Where does the Zippo case draw the line with respect to online transactions?
Well, the Zippo case doesn't actually draw the line. They indicated that it's more of a sliding scale, and so it requires the court to look at the quality and nature of the contacts. The Zippo case did give a breakdown of some of the other treatments by other jurisdictions, and this case most recently in Trintech indicated that it had considered the Zippo case as well as the Cybercell case out of the Ninth Circuit. In the Trinet case, as Your Honor may recall, the court ultimately found there was not enough evidence in the record to analyze the website at issue. But it seemed.
What does the website have to do with the ruling below?
The website was one of the factors that the court considered in looking at Slocum Enterprises and Slocum Trust's overall contacts with the forum state.
But I thought that in the end, both the magistrate judge and the district judge, in effect, assumed that there was adequate purposeful availment because of the website and perhaps other factors, but then went on to rule it didn't matter because there was no overlap between the subject matter of the declaratory judgment action and the activities of either Slocum Enterprise.
Well, I think in looking at the test that the court applied, both of those were considered. The court considered the factual contacts of Slocum Enterprises and Trust, and then also considered to what extent they were related to the claims asserted.
Do you believe that the district judge relied on purposeful availment or assumed purposeful availment?
I think the district court set up a hypothetical saying if there was purposeful availment, it still wasn't enough.
You don't think that's assuming?
That would be assuming.
As opposed to holding that there was.
Correct, Your Honor.
District court considered a number of factors, owning property, paying taxes, maintaining offices, employees, coming to New Jersey to solicit sales, physical presence, registered to do business. That's basically the ground for her decision, wasn't it?
Yes, Your Honor, there were a few other factors in there also.
But I guess you have to ask whether in today's electronic world, some of those prior criteria can be substituted for by our electronic communications that we're on using.
Well, I think you, Judge Mitchell mentioned earlier that... Judge Mitchell indicated earlier that the problem that a patentee faces, if any contact with a forum state is adequate to invoke and exercise jurisdiction. In this case, it appears that Slocum Enterprises and Trust were very careful to limit their contacts with New Jersey and indeed to keep their activities primarily in Oregon, where they have their offices, where they conduct
their business. You said they were very careful.
They were very careful.
I think they did it to avoid being sued, or probably because they didn't have the resources. They weren't a nationwide company that wanted to establish all these connections.
I think that in part it's due to their size. They are a small entity, and so they have local counsel, and they primarily operate in a small venue. But if you look at the user licenses, which were submitted in evidence, all of those indicate that they are governed by the laws of the state of Oregon, that the New Jersey veterinarians, as well as veterinarians from other jurisdictions who signed them, agreed to be bound by personal jurisdiction and venue into Oregon, which I think does show an intent to try and carefully manage how the patent may be interpreted to, you know, obtain consistent rulings if possible.
Does the intent of the patent holder have any relevance to the jurisdictional inquiry?
Subjective intent, probably not, but the objective effect of that, I think it does, because it does touch on the purposeful availment criteria. This is an entity or two entities who were very careful about trying to maintain themselves in Oregon.
You should fit the totality of the activities of the two should be considered together in your own view, because they're both defendants.
That was an issue that was raised in the briefing below, and it appears that the analysis of the two was very closely linked, but there was not a specific argument made until the appellant's reply brief that there should be, that the court be required to consider both entities' activities together.
Well, the court's analysis treated them separately, correct?
Yes, it did. And
so if they're right that they ought to have been treated together, don't we need to reevaluate the facts here?
I think even if you do consider them both together, you are still looking at a series of contacts that are very minimal to the forum.
But do we know for sure whether the district court judge or the magistrate, what they would have concluded if they combined which of the acts of both entities?
We don't know for certain that, no.
Let me ask you actually about that point. In the magistrate's order, at some point she says, it's at page 364, she says that the some issue is a new argument raised only in the reply brief, so she's not going to consider it. Do you know whether she meant there the alter ego issue or the 19A issue of failure that you raised, failure to join an indispensable party?
I believe she means the alter ego issue. I'm not certain. Again, I was not a part of that litigation, so I wasn't there for the oral argument, but I believe that it was the alter ego issue based on how the briefing reads.
But she's talking to you all, and she says she's not going to consider the alter ego issue, but don't you read her opinion as finding that the two were separate?
Yes, I do, Your Honor.
And so she was rejecting the other side's argument that the two should not be considered separately?
Counsel, put aside the peculiar circumstances of internet sales. Let's assume there was no internet involvement here at all. But there were repeated transactions between some number of veterinarians in New Jersey and the two Slocum entities in Oregon. As I recall, there were 100 separate invoices transmitted from Oregon to these customers, licensees in New Jersey, veterinarians. Why is it so minimal if there are 100 transactions, 100 invoices? I'm sure they weren't for free. I mean, the company was charging these veterinarians for training and for licenses and for product to use in the surgery. 100 transactions that all involve money. Why is that so minimal?
Those 100 transactions were to entities who had signed the user license agreement, which indicated that they were going to be bound by Oregon personal and venue. Those transactions were at the request of New Jersey residents who were availing themselves, if you will, to an Oregon company, not vice versa. And those transactions amounted to less than 1% of Slocum Enterprises' overall sales during the period leading up to the filing of this lawsuit.
So what? Is there some 1% rule out there in the case law that I don't know about?
There is not a 1% rule, Your Honor, but it does indicate that this is minimum contacts. The question is whether it's sufficient minimum contacts.
Well, for 50 states, if sales were all divided equally, then those states would be more than 2% of the population. 0.8% is not that different from 2%.
It's not, Your Honor, but it is nevertheless a very small contact where the court has to decide, looking at the totality of the circumstances, is this sufficient minimum contacts? We would submit that it's not. That for an entity of this size who's tried very hard to maintain an Oregon presence.
Well, why does the size of the Oregon Slocum entities have any place in the analysis at all?
It lends to the Burger King factors of the burden on the defendant to have to defend the litigation in foreign jurisdiction.
Burger King went to fairness, not expense or inconvenience. There are other procedures for dealing with an inconvenient forum. This really has to do with constitutional limits on personal jurisdiction. I didn't understand that the size of the company was part of the analysis or the intent of the company. Do you think they are?
I think that when the court looks at the context that a defendant has with a foreign jurisdiction and has to decide whether these are sufficient minimum contacts and whether exercise of jurisdiction is fair in those circumstances, I think they can become relevant. Clearly, they're not the only factors. Clearly, they're not the most important factors. The most important factors that have been set out by this court would indicate, though, that these are two entities that do not have the type of contacts that one would normally see.
Time has expired. Thank you.
Thank you, Your Honor.
Your Honor, with respect to general jurisdiction, the law is well settled that it's a question of whether the contacts are continuous and systematic. And when we submit in this case, it's not just the sales, it's not just the percentage of sales, but it's all the other activities put together. And when you look at all the activities, you find that there's general jurisdiction. And those include the website and the license agreements and the sales. It includes training and certification, all related to New Jersey.
Is there any specific evidence about how these 7 veterinarians learned of the product and the method that they could obtain from the 2 Oregon entities?
I'm sure that they find these in a number of different ways, for example, attending trade shows.
No, I'm asking about specific evidence about 7 particular veterinarians. Do we know how they came to even be aware that Slocum existed and had these things for sale?
We do not know that. I think there's more like 11 or 14.
Whatever the number of veterinarians. There's no record evidence of how they learned they could buy this stuff from Slocum.
It must be from Slocum's advertising activities.
Well, you say must be, but maybe not. Maybe it's word of mouth. Maybe one veteran used to live in Oregon, he moved to New Jersey. He told all of his professional colleagues in New Jersey about the existence of this. I mean, if we had some proof that they were mailing flyers into New Jersey once a week for 5 years, that might be very significant. But as far as I'm aware, there's no proof at all of how these veterinarians ever heard of Slocum.
Right, well, we do know about the website.
That's right.
And so we do know also that they send information into the licensed vets with invoices. So they send advertising information.
Yeah, but those are already customers.
True.
So I'm trying to figure out how one first becomes a customer.
Yeah, I think it's the website and trade shows and...
Do you agree with opposing counsel that the facts in the Southern District declaratory judgment action are essentially the same?
Well, I think there is a difference. I think the sales are much greater. So to the extent that they're arguing that the sales are below some threshold, which I don't know, again...
As to the relatedness issue, is there any difference? Is there any reason to expect a different result from the court in New York than from the court in Newark?
It's possible that there was more activity directed at the New York forum than New Jersey jurisdictional discovery has occurred.
Are you not involved in the New York action?
Jurisdictional discovery hasn't occurred. It's in.
Are you not involved?
Yes,
in
I am.
Anything further?
Again, I just point to the totality of the factors and that the website needs to be considered not by its own, but as part of the contributing factors towards general jurisdiction.
All right, we thank both counsel. We'll take the appeal under advisement.
Thank you. Thank you, Your Honor.